Taiwan Riot and beginning of the visit with Wade and Jane and Rick this Saturday afternoon, the 5th of August, 72. Channel 1 Riot and the beginning of the visit with Wade and Rick and Jane this Saturday afternoon, 5th of August, 72. Channel 1 Riot and beginning of the visit with Wade and Rick and Jane this Saturday afternoon, 15th of August, 72.
And she was talking to him, and she seemed kind of excited about our subject. He was bitching at her because their typewriter had lousy type on it.
Yeah, he writes on my papers. You need a new ribbon.
He used to write more on my papers than I did.
Mm-hmm.
I was very embarrassed.
It's weird because he has such teeny tiny writing. And he writes a phenomenal amount of it, and I can't read it. I don't have any idea what he said. And periodically I'll just pick up something like, you know, you need to clean your ears out, or stupid stuff.
Well, I found using that silk ribbon on my typewriter, my keys haven't gotten dirty at all.
Really?
A little ink buildup on them, but no lint at all. That's been very good.
Where do you get a silk ribbon?
I got this at the Ad typewriter shop. It was
$275. Yeah.
It's the Smith Corona.
Yeah.
And I'm still running across the top. It's a solid black, so I can still go across the bottom. It's starting to get a little bit light, and I'll have to switch it pretty soon. But I put that on, I guess, in June. So I've gotten a lot of mileage out of it so far.
Yeah.
That's why I did that in red, because my black's too light.
Yeah.
This is my father's typewriter, so it is a red one.
Well, now, let's see, Jane. You've not been doing anything. Just living in a cell. But what is that above you?
Bunch of morons?
No, the one that drops. Is it a woman or a girl?
Mary drop, Beth?
Huh?
Mary Beth?
That drops, yes.
Mary Beth is the 850-ton moose that used to live upstairs who finally moved out.
Oh, she moved out?
Had a party to celebrate the fact that Mary Beth moved away.
Well, but now she was one of your neighbors.
That was a grievous thing, too, having Mary Beth as my neighbor.
She was the one that cooked or something, wasn't it?
Yes, give us that
recipes.
Yeah, she cooks. She would give me recipes periodically.
You're using your telephone voice.
I get accused of that a lot.
Well, Mary Beth's greatest, the thing that I remember her for the longest is that she's about 5'10", and she weighs at least 200 pounds. I mean, at a bare minimum, she weighs 200 pounds.
Yeah.
And I'm 5'9", and I weigh 130. And she's got 1 inch and at least 70 pounds on me, and I'm not small. And she wears clogs. She wears wooden shoes.
Yeah.
And she has wooden floors. And when Mary Beth walks across the floor, you know by God that someone has walked across that floor. Because when she walked, or she ran to get the doorbell or the phone, the pictures would fall off my walls. Fall right off the walls. Because
yeah.
I have, you know, little teeny tiny picture tacks, and the wires would just, they'd shake so much, they'd just slide right off. She cracked the glass in one of my pictures one time because it fell. So I had to be sure all my pictures are hanging above things that, the pictures with glass are hanging above things that are soft, so that if they fall off, they won't break.
You can put it. You have to put bigger tacks in them, wouldn't you?
Well, I tried. I have to put a 16 penny nail to keep them in there, and then my walls would fall apart.
Yes.
That's Mary Beth, but she did finally move away. She's a terrible girl.
And she had a.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Thank you so much. I'll be there.
You had vast contacts with her.
She used to come down and borrow things. All the time. She used to come down and borrow eggs. Bake stuff. She'd come down and borrow a cup of sugar. And she never returned anything. Never once did she ever return anything. And one time, I went to make brownies. It was finals, and I thought if I made a batch of brownies, and I had brownies to get me through, it would cheer me up. And so I got the mix and put it in the bowl and put the nuts in, grated them all up, put in a cup of water or whatever it is, and went in to put an egg. There were no eggs. And I went and I said, Annie, what'd you do with all the eggs? She said, well, Mary Beth came down and borrowed four. I said, what'd you give her four eggs for? We'll never get them back. So I went up and I banged on the door. I said, Mary Beth, do you have any eggs? She said, no. I said, well, I need to have an egg to make some brownies. She said, oh, gee, brownies. I haven't had brownies in a long time. She said, would you bring me one when you get done? I said, Mary Beth, I can't make them because you keep borrowing all my eggs and all my sugar and everything I have, and I can't cook because you keep borrowing things. You never return them. She says, are you going to frost those? And I just turned around, went downstairs, went over to 7-Eleven, and bought six eggs. And she never, never, ever returned anything.
Yeah.
And finally, I just said, all right, she wants a drink of water, she can bring her own cup, and I'll give it to her. And that was it. And I just stopped loading them things, because I would go to have some cereal, and there wouldn't be any milk. I'd go to make something, and there wouldn't be any eggs. I'd go to make tea or make Kool-Aid, there's no sugar. I'd go to make a cake. She borrowed my egg beater. She had that for a week and a half because I don't use an egg beater very often. But I went to make a birthday
cake. Seemed
like
you told us.
And it wasn't there.
Of some encounter you had with her right there at the door. She came down at the door one time.
She came. She always came to the door. I never invited her in. I wouldn't have her in.
And was this about a recipe? She was going to give you a recipe.
She offered a couple times to give me her banana bread recipe.
Yes.
And then she told me she needed a cup and a half of my flour to make it.
Yeah.
And I told her I didn't have any flour, so she'd have to go buy some. She said, well, I don't have any money. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't have any flour. And she said, well, you usually have a lot of flour. And I said, well, I usually do, but you keep borrowing it, so I don't have any more. And so I never did get the banana bread recipe because she got mad at me for that.
I don't blame her. I think you're hard on her.
Well, we devised a scheme one time, Annie. Well, actually, Annie thought it up, but I was gonna carry it out. We figured we'd rig up. We have two cats. Annie has a cat, and I have a cat. And we figured we'd fill the cat box up full with cat gravel, and we would change it for a week, and then we'd hang it directly over her door. With a string on it attached to her doorknob so that when she turned the doorknob it would fall down on her head. We were going to do that. Three times we started, but we never could live for the cat box till it got really full. We'd just have to go dump it. But I really seriously considered doing that. I used to do that for a long time. I never did do it though. But it used to cheer me up whenever she'd get up at, because her room was above mine, whenever she'd get up at 3:00 in the morning because she couldn't sleep, and she'd put on her stereo full blast to calm her down so she could go to sleep and wake me up, and the dog would bark, and Annie would get up and start running around. I always figured that I would do it then. That would cheer me up. Console me, knowing that she'd get it in the end, but she never did. She's a terrible slob. She used to, instead of walking downstairs and around the side to the back to put her trash in the garbage can, she'd just walk down the stairs to get the mail and put it right there by the mailboxes, which happens to be right outside my front door.
Just leave it there.
And leave it there. Mm-hmm. So I'd open the door and there'd be 8 million flies flying around, you know, and everything, and they'd come all flying into my apartment. So that went on for about, a day, and I marched upstairs and put the sack outside her door. I figured, you know, walk up the flight of stairs won't hurt me, so I did that. And that happened twice, and then I'd always trot it back upstairs. And so finally, I just got tired of putting it upstairs. So I took a paper bag that I had and wet one side of it really well, and then I started a tear in it, and then I dumped all of her trash into this wet paper bag with the tear started and put it next to her door. I leaned, propped it up against her door, knowing that when she opened the door, it would all fall in the sack would break, and she would have garbage all over her floor. And I added I use coffee filters when I make coffee, because it filters out all the crap. And so I added some coffee grounds to the top just for good measure, because I know she has a light colored rug. And so that was the last time she didn't take the garbage out. After that, she started making the 10-foot trek around the side of the house to put it in the trash can.
She learned a lesson.
She did.
But that stereo would ease her quite her nerves.
I don't know how, but it did. Yeah, she can go right to sleep. But she didn't have, she doesn't have a, you know, a record player. She has an 8-track tape thing.
Endless.
And it doesn't stop. Now, a record player I might could live with, because you figure, you know, a record size is 15 minutes long. Sure, it'll go off. But an 8-track will go on for weeks.
That's just a circle of tape. That'll go
on. And one time, she put it on after she had taken some kind of drugs. I don't know what they were, but anyway, it made her sleepy. And she passed out. And she slept for a day and a half.
Yeah.
And she played some god-awful thing. I don't know what it was. For a day and a half, and I couldn't get in to turn it off, and I couldn't wake her up, couldn't budge her, and I called her and banged on the door. The woman across the yard, she's a little old lady, and she's, you know, trying to think, and she couldn't think because this racket was so bad. So finally, the neighbor, she called the police. They went and got Mary Beth up.
Yeah. Pull your chair down that way. It's looking closer to the.
Doubled up here now in the fan population. I'm not going to start a corner market on him, I hope.
You know, one of my friends used to come over here, and he wouldn't let me buy with anything. And I had a saw out there, and it was dull, and he says, "Don't you have anything better than this?" I says, "No, that's all I got." "You mean," he says, "you've just a one saw ranch?"
Yeah. You didn't say you need two of everything to get along in this world.
Yeah. We've already had a session. She started out with Robinson Crusoe, Defoe, and he's one of the dullest men who ever lived. And she's had the whole thing this summer. On top of that, she's had the masterpieces of the ancient world. In yellow.
Yellow notes. In a monotone. He reads to us. My teacher, he reads to us for 50 minutes, 4 days a week. From his notes that he's been teaching the same stupid class, probably in the same stupid room, in the same stupid ugly tie, in the same stupid ugly pants, in the same stupid ugly shoes that he never shines, or anything, probably doesn't even tie him, for 34 years at least, if not 134, his notes are yellowed, and they're taped, and they're bedraggled, and he reads his notes to us for an hour,
same
50 minutes.
Every year.
Same test, same
yeah.
Books. His books are so old that he has a rubber band around them all, because they fall apart if he opens them.
It went around his head, too.
Well, now, his father, you know, is the man down there on that statue.
Oh, that's, I was going to ask you, that was Murphy.
Oh.
I've had,
is that his father?
His father.
I wondered who that guy was.
You sure was.
Yeah. Murphy, Alfie Dog. I've had a lot of good naps in his class. I got a lot of sleep in his class.
Yeah, I write letters. I only go to his class.
Now she got this roommate up there who had the stereo. The roommate's gone now. At 3 o'clock in the morning, when she couldn't sleep, she'd just put on the stereo and it rattled so it knocked the pictures off the wall.
Full blast. She has a $400 8-track tape with a radio and a hall of 16, you know, speakers all over the place. She can't sleep. She puts it on.
That's
full blast.
In your apartment, not
no,
even
upstairs.
Next.
Upstairs.
That, you live in that crazy house over there, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Those weird people in it?
Yeah. Yeah. And Ed Carmadone. She put it on. Trying to blast her to sleep. I don't know how she could think
of
that.
Well, does she have an automatic cutoff?
She'd just leave it on.
Till you woke up?
Till she woke up.
All those 8 tapes.
One time. This is why I was later coming here than I had planned. I locked myself out. Didn't put my keys in my purse when I got home from the last time I drove the car, and so I went out to the car and got in the car and sat down and discovered I didn't have my keys. So I had to break into my apartment to go and get my keys.
Had to break in.
Yeah, you can do it. It's really easy to break into my apartment. Take a credit card and stick it between the door and the lock, and it's very easy. And so I can always get in if I lock myself out, but. Mary Beth's roommate Shelley had invited my cat in, Ophelia. He likes my cat. And it got to be about 10 o'clock at night, and I discovered Ophelia was outside, and I couldn't figure out, you know, why she would be outside that late, because she was just about 4 months old, and she didn't go out at night much. She was afraid of the dark. So I'm walking around outside calling Ophelia, and I hear this little tiny cat crying, and they had gone off or asleep or something, and there's Ophelia up in Shelley's window crying her head off. She wanted out. They don't have a cat box, and they didn't feed her anything. And so I went upstairs with my trusty Engo card and knocked the door open, and I called her, and she came tearing out, running downstairs. She was so glad to get out. So I could break in their apartment, too. I went in one time when they left. I knew for a fact they had gone and left the stereo on, and I just went in and turned it off.
You know, I found out one time it's not the noise or the idea of the stereo that does that. Now, this was a television, but it was on full blast, and it didn't bother me. And it was right up there where it would drown me. But it was the fella who had it on, or the people that had it on, I felt rather kindly towards them, and anything they did just pleased me. So it's partly in your attitude.
Toward the person. But my attitude toward Mary Beth, I have to admit, is largely influenced by the fact that Mary Beth has been the cause of many a poor night's sleep for me.
Yeah.
And especially this summer, it's been bad because I'm the only person in the whole building who's in school. And I don't like to jump up and down and say, you know, you all have to be quiet because I have to study,
yeah,
which isn't very supporting. So I go to the library if I have to study and they want to make noise.
Yeah.
But I think at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, if they want to make noise and I want to sleep, I have a legitimate complaint.
Yeah.
So I complain.
Yeah, you're right about that attitude. It may be a little bothersome, but if you've got a bad attitude, it's 100 times worse.
Oh, it's so
it
much
is.
Worse, yeah.
Just
you want to kill them. It's murder. It's so bad.
Well, I can ignore a lot. I can ignore the fact that Mary Beth lived upstairs, but I didn't see her very much. She didn't come to visit me unless she needed something. She used to borrow stuff all the time. But the noise was just too much. Because my dog howls. She plays this one record she has a Moog synthesizer in it. It's all electronic computer music. And it's very high and squeaky, and it sounds like someone's taking a computerized chicken and wringing its neck and then running over it with a lawnmower a couple times. That's the way this record sounds whenever she plays it. Especially really loud, my dog howls, because it hurts his ears. It hurts my ears, but it must really do something fierce to his. And I just don't need to have my dog howling at me in the middle of the night. And that, of course, that doesn't faze Mary Beth, because she can't hear the dog howling over the racket of her stereo.
Sounds like your kind of music, Ray.
Ray, you haven't, I haven't seen you. What have you got into?
Well, I've been down to McAnuffie a little bit. You know, I got down there when they were starting to move that house. And that was when I first talked to Buster. Well, I didn't realize it, but the reason I got in there without too much trouble was they moved the house. And I guess people coming around were all curiosity seekers.
Oh, I see.
So he said he asked me too much. And then I went down the next day, just after they'd moved the house. And I talked to Jack Sanders for a while. I went for a ride with him. But then I went down, I skipped a day just to kind of cool it a little bit, and then went down the next. The house was gone. And the commotion about the house was gone. And I was sitting there, and Wade's little boy comes up and says, "I've sure seen you around here a lot. What are you doing here?" So I decided we're going to have to stay away a little while or find a little better motive than just going down and sitting on the bench. Buster was down there working on his car, working on several of his cars. He had 3 of them with the hoods up and I guess 4 or 5 batteries. He's got a little tool, just got a clip that'll hold onto the battery terminals, and then a piece of wood across it, and he can just pick up batteries. He'll get out of his car, and he pulled 3 or 4 out of his car, and went and took all the batteries out of the other cars, and put all these other batteries back in, and started them all up. And then he'd call and tell people, well, you had a dead battery. That's amazing. I've never seen anybody have so many batteries. And then he'd haul them all inside, I guess, charge them up. He was talking to some fellow there. You know, he's got all those cars out front. I guess they all belong to him. Two or three of them do.
Most gentlemen he'll own.
Yeah.
Enough to put up a show.
And he was complaining, because, see, he's got two keys to that car, and somebody wanted to borrow the car, he'd give him the key. And they'll go out and have a copy made of the key, or else tell him they've lost the key, and not give it back, see. And then he'll come back in, say he's been out of town a day or two, and he'll look in the car, and there'll be 100 miles on it that wasn't there last time. Or there'll be a pop bottle rolling around the seat. And these people just wait till Buster's not around, they get in and drive his car off and drive around town a little while, see. He doesn't complain. He says, I don't mind as long as they'll tell me. I says, they don't tell me, that's not doing it right. He doesn't seem to get too upset over it. And every time somebody comes by, Buster will stick his head out from under the hood and give him a wave.
He don't seem to miss it, does he?
No.
I don't know what he's going to do when the traffic gets heavy. He doesn't miss anything now. You didn't ask about the town council thing, did you?
That first day I was there, I spoke to him a little bit about town council.
Let him have it.
Go ahead. I don't remember what he said. Buster was real upset over the fire department, you know. Seems as though they had such a good fire department there for what, about until about 1 or 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And he was telling me he had been number 6, and it was now number 26.
Yeah, something like that.
And the reason they'd had a good fire department was because of Buster Mountain.
Oh.
That was his statement. Yeah, Buster Mountain.
I was going to ask you if you knew the mountains, because David, my friend works at the YMCA camp, and Mrs. Mountain is the cook there. And he asked me one time.
And that's J.R.'s
wife. And I said, no. And he said, no, you ought. If you want to meet weird people in Okanopee, you ought to go meet her. Because when she comes, and her husband comes to pick her up, and they sit around and talk, and he tells her about the things people have done all day. He said, now that's a weird, screwy bunch there. And he said, and then the brother-in-law came one time to pick her up. And he said, I've never met a weird man in that. And I wondered, you know, who this is. Mine was.
Yeah, that's JR's wife, JR man. Yeah, he's talking about Buster, and that's the brother-in-law, the weird one.
Now, you see, Gene, the way you do, you see, it's the same voice, except you use it a little bit different. you get just a little bit more guarding in it. You get it every now and then, and you let it go, and then when you let it go, you speed up. And I can't hear you. I'm geared to spoken English, and not fast English. My ears won't work that fast. So I lost everything in that.
I was thinking Buster was J.R. Mountain, and then Buster was just a nickname.
That's the old man.
Well,
he's on the door.
J.R. Mountain over the door there.
That's the old man.
Buster was, Buster said across the street, you know, they've got a little building there, it's got that Porsche sign hanging on it, and next to it's a little clearing. Buster said he used to have his cars over there. I had them all lined up nice and neat, and they all had tags on them. As I didn't start them every day, but they'd run. Well, the fellow next to him put in a complaint about it, and said that they were junk cars and you couldn't keep them there in the town proper. And then I guess it was Brigwell who signed a warrant against him. And they had an ordinance on the books about it, so that he had to tow those cars off, and Buster's mad because it cost him, he said, about $100 to haul them off, and they wouldn't pay me back for it. Well, this fellow that put out the complaint the first time had 7 horses in his backyard, which is also illegal. They've got an ordinance for that. So Buster turned around and put a complaint in on him. Only he went over to the council and talked to him. The council gave him a permit for $25. That's what Sugarman told me. To keep the horses. And then the fellow went and dug a little pool back there for the horses to drink out of. And Buster said it was stagnant. And then he went on and defined why it was stagnant. Because it didn't have a spring. It didn't have anything flowing into it. And it didn't have anything flowing out of it. But it was a prolific breeder of mosquitoes.
It's Walt Evelyn's property he's talking about.
Oh.
Yeah. Why does he have cars?
Well, Buster runs a garage there, see.
Oh.
Sort of a garage.
You don't have to hang around over there. When is the town?
Oh, boy, it's Monday night.
Monday night.
I think I'll have to buy tickets. I'm sure you're going to have to buy tickets Monday night.
Do I have the deputy back?
He's going to have to be there, and perhaps two or three lawyers.
Oh.
It's going to hit Monday night. I don't know whether we're going to bring in our attorney or not. It's all a question of what we're going to try to do Monday night. I think we're just going to use tape recorders.
Yeah.
Now, this week would have been the grand finale week to be in Micanopy. You know that house, the big house moving scene?
Yeah.
It's stuck over around Shiloh in front of the mailman, the rural route man's house. And they're going to have to take the whole bloody top off of the house to get it underneath the power line that they can't get permission to cut.
Oh,
no way!
Oh,
they're going to cut the top off it.
And Mayor called up and told Beverly all this. I'd heard about it before. And she said he was chuckling and laughing so much. He said his wife was rolling in the floor. He says, he's Catholic. He says, his priest is going to have to get on to him for enjoying other people's misery. He's so happy.
Shiloh is way over there.
I'm not sure. It's somewhere in that vicinity. It's other side of 75 south, good ways. You can get to it by going, you know, underneath 75 and then following that paved road on around and turning left, I think, on the first paved road. Going back down towards the Ocala area.
Hmm.
He's way over in Marion County.
Yeah.
I thought he was just down there in McIntosh.
Mm-hmm. It's a good ways from McIntosh.
Because I was going to go try and find out where they dropped the house the other night. And
just ask anybody in McIntosh. They'll be well informed, I guarantee you.
And it's stuck to him?
Yeah. I heard this yesterday, it stuck, and then today I heard they were going to have to cut the roof off. And I saw Beverly written down something about $2,000. I imagine that cost that at a minimum. See, the moving man tried to sell the contract back to Chimwell before he ever started. After he signed that contract, and he didn't know where he was when he signed the contract. And Chimwell refused to buy it or take it back or release him from it, and made him move it. And that poor moving man is going to go so far in the hole, and this job is pathetic.
Yeah.
He could just walk off.
Not without being sued for everything.
Mr. you know, Dr. Singh that used to live over there?
Evans.
He's back.
He talked to me when I dug this silo trench out here. And he said he got into it in some work over there at Cross Creek. They wanted that mouth of Cross Creek cleared out. And he had his big machine there, you see, and he'd take it out. And as fast as he'd take it out, it'd fill up. And there was just no way of coming out except for him to go broke. So he just walked off. Didn't collect anything, but he didn't lose any more.
But did he have a contract signed?
I don't know.
See,
apparently not.
See, that's a mistake. See, Shimwell's that attorney type.
Yeah.
And he plays that right down. I mean, he knows enough to know when he's more or less, I mean, when he's got his legal rights.
Yeah.
His legal rights.
Yeah.
But there's come up some questions now that he might get back into it. We weren't going to bother him since he's already gone. But there's a couple of stipulations that we found out later. It's a good, strong possibility that he might get back in on a suitcase, too. Oh, it's really going round and round. We've got the council now. I know that.
What?
We've got, we're going to, either two or three members, we can get a warrants worn out on them. They'll get $500 fine and or 6 months in jail and suspension from office. See, having lived up, see, the count, government like that can do anything they please, anything, if they do it according to the law. And law gives them leniency. Oh, good gracious. A majority, three people, can just about completely destroy the town of Micanopy before you run them out of office. And it's nothing, no way you can turn until their term is up. If they have a legal meeting and they don't do anything that's contrary to the charter or the ordinances.
Not much you can do.
But the ordinances and the charter is such that it would enable them to do about anything.
They could just about do anything they please, yes.
As long as they know what they're doing it by the charter and the ordinances.
They messed up, though. They didn't do it by the charter. They sure fouled up.
How did you detect that?
Oh, just by the procedure they went through. They first of all, they conducted town business and without having an open public declared meeting. Mm-hmm. And they gave a verbal permit to do something by ordinance that requires a written permit to do. And it also requires that plans be submitted and be approved and everything else before this happens. There's an ordinance the state set. And these men called up the attorney. The attorney said, hell, let them move it. So we got the attorney, too, see. House of Folds.
Oh.
Yes, sir. I'm going to get him, too. At least get him run off. He's already delivered three opinions in the favor of the three men that he has not bothered to check into as to exactly what is going on.
Yeah.
He's just said, oh, yeah, that's fine. You know. And he doesn't know the facts. And the facts dictate differently.
Yeah.
And hell, he wrote these ordinances himself. He wrote them up, and he doesn't know them. But you know he does a lot of writing. I'm sure he couldn't remember everything.
Where does he live?
They're from Gainesville.
Yeah.
Always one of those big... Well, his partner's the O.C. Fagan, the city attorney.
Oh, yes.
So, and that's... Is that Sigsby Scruggs' office? I don't know. It doesn't make too much difference. Oops. I called his partner to begin with on the paving deal to see what his reading was on sunshine violation on the paving deal. And he said, well, they've definitely violated, I mean, an off-the-cuff opinion is that they have violated the spirit of the law. And that's more or less what that sunshine law is about. But it had been really somewhat difficult to say, to really bring it up in court. And then the attorney comes in and just makes a flat statement. Our attorney says, oh, no, that's no violation what you guys did. And he didn't really check in exactly what they did. But they had a closed meeting in which they passed that road paving issue.
That ended up in a tie, I thought, that road paving issue, didn't it?
No, it was canceled out. They're reluctant to bring it up again. Oh, me, if they do, they made it emphatic the last meeting when I was discussing the minutes, you know, and I said it's unclear to me as to whether or not you people can go ahead and pave that road from reading the minutes. It says the way I read the minutes, you can go out anytime you bloody well please and sign a contract on that road. And he was like, oh, no, we're not going to do that. And about three of them, no, we're not doing that. Help, don't do it on the road. But then the guys are really sort of dense. It's unfortunate. But they did it again. They just wouldn't learn.
Two of them are exceedingly dense. I don't think they've always been that dense. Well, now, let's see. You haven't made contact with anybody in particular. Now, you didn't have any transactions with the boy that moved the house.
No personal transactions.
Not at all.
He offered to make a mortgage on my building, which I just for the hell of it asked him, and he was very anxious to do it. But I'd be a damn fool to let him hold a mortgage for me. But there, he and Mr. Thrasher could work hand in glove on mortgages.
Oh.
They have a closeout stipulation in there, say a 30-day clause or something, and they'll let you slip behind two payments and keep right on paying right up to the last day, and then go anytime they want to, then come in and close it.
Yeah.
So if you see, in other words, you write your contract and say you can fall behind 30 days on one payment, and then they have the right to, they can come in and just say, well, that's it. Now, if you haven't made that payment. So if you do fall behind, they don't say, oh, sure, that's all right. So you keep paying. Pay it out, about 90% paid out, and they can come in at any leisure time. Say, sorry, you're late on your payment. And take it to the attorney, and next thing you know, your property's gone.
And
Thrasher did that. An old man Thrasher did that quite a bit.
Old man Thrasher before
the grand, this Thrasher's father. Townsend told me that right out there on that road we were on today, there's a colored family lived across the street from him, and they bought a horse from J.D. Thrasher, the old man, and they'd almost paid it out, and they'd gone to town and are halfway back, probably down by the River Styx Bridge, and Thrasher sent somebody out there and got the horse out from under the wagon and took it back to town and left them to get the wagon home the best they could. So that'd be Shimwell's situation. I'm sure he'd find some legal way to nab me, get that building.
Yeah, he would enjoy doing that.
Oh, he'd laugh. He'd laugh all the way home. He loves it. I mean, that's his sport in life.
Yeah.
Didn't he? When I was over there the day they moved it, there was a lady came by who was going to mail a letter, and she was complaining about all the shrubs, and Shimwell said, it was all taken care of. We got a $200 bond on the shrubs.
Yeah.
Now, whether that's going to help him live, I don't know. But he knew there was going to be some stink raised about the fact that we're going to have to pull all that hedge up and knock half the sign down. And they pulled up a redbud tree, and it never did make it.
Mm-hmm.
So he had that bond at sea. So if anything happened, it was paid for.
That was Lillian Mary who came by.
And Lillian Mary?
I've never even spoken with her before that day, personally, because she had an awful look on her face when she comes home from work.
Is that the old Mary family?
They own practically all of Micanopy, her family.
No, I did.
Did.
Yeah.
Yeah. All Tuscarora area, everything, all of that. And that's just her mother. And herself, I think, is all that's left.
It's amazing how they disintegrate and disappear, those big families.
Yes, and I think that's the last of them, and that's the last piece of property they have, evidently, that little piece that the house is built on.
Now look at her lawn, you see. We live in a big house across from Sasha, with those plate glass doors and windows.
Mm-hmm.
And that some of his survivors, but you don't know them as his survivors.
No, the guy that running the house is a sort of a plane watcher in Miami.
Oh, is he?
You know, a tower observation man or something like that. Buddy Miller. And he's just, as you might say, common is his mentality. I mean, he doesn't have anything sharp about him. He no great deal of money. And somebody who had told me the other day that old man Herlong here was mad as a brother. It's always, he just made him so mad because his brother was worth $3 million and he's only worth $1 million.
Yeah.
And it just got him so mad he couldn't hardly stand it.
Now his boy, you see, you know that his son that survives and lives out there, and you know Mr. Patterson up there in the Murphy area?
No.
Well, his son was there before Mr. Patterson, then he came back and took over when Mr. Patterson resigned. He retired. And he's quiet. He never gets in anybody's way. But he's gifted in everything. All the electrical and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one to build a house right down there at the edge of Tuscarora on that back road that goes into the county line road. It's right there where the road from Micanopy goes into the county line road.
Mm-hmm.
At the corner of Micanopy. That's where he built that house. And it's a showplace. He's got everywhere he goes, he can push a button and things happen.
That's being talented.
Well, he is. He's gifted. He got money.
I've heard so much in this last week, my head's about to pop open. It's just burdened down. I tried to write about Townsend's here.
Yeah.
And I didn't get away from there till 12:15.
Yeah.
And you saw me when I went by.
Yeah.
Good Lord of mercy.
Yeah.
And I, just this morning, I'm telling you, stuff came out of there, and I looked, I said, good God, it's 12 o'clock. I said, man, I just talk so much. And they both laughed a little bit and followed me out the car and told me another long story. About a flim-flam man. I mean, whew.
So that, now you see what the way it works, Wayne. Ratliff in the Hamlet. Now you haven't got into that.
No.
Well, he's a man in the countryside. They all are in the Hamlet. And he's a sewing machine man. He's got a little rig, you see, with a back end on it that's built like a sewing machine. That's what he does, take them out and sell them. But largely, as Faulkner says, he sells 2 or 3 a year. That is just his bait. And he uses a sewing machine as a key.
Well, that land dealing thing, I mean, that's, okay, that's, let's see, six, first one was 3, and about 2 on the second. I've been at it almost 8 hours and did 3 visits.
You've been over there 3 times?
For 8 hours total.
And not much of that was on land.
Oh, good Lord, I could compact that all in 30 minutes. I mean, today was supposed to be the closing deal, and we spent 10 minutes on it, maybe 15.
Well, line out the land side of it. Let's
Well, that is right interesting. It has to do with the whole thing. See, they've got that 155 acres around the corner on the Cross Creek Road. It's cleared.
Yeah.
And
you talk about nice land. I was over there when they bulldozed it, and that's beautiful soil. And it goes clear back right to the...
Half a mile from Orange Lake. Right then. It is a half mile there.
Yeah.
But it's pretty far back in there. And you think it's good soil?
Oh, yes.
What do you think that land's worth? Do you have any idea? Per acre? You couldn't speculate.
Well, I've only used it for an occasion.
I'm going to run you through real estate school here pretty soon. Got a big Indian mound on it.
Oh, has it?
Yeah, and it's also got a trench that's dug, you know, it's a quarter section. And so in the trench, say this is the whole section, and that trench evidently goes in that kind of arc, which makes the trench, gets close to a half a mile wide or a quarter of a mile trench that the Indians dug, and for God knows what. Said they dug those ponds on there, and they let the archaeologists in there to dig one time. People have been digging on and off and since they've owned it, and reduced the size of the mound. Let the archaeologist in there to dig, and Miss Townsend said that she gave him permission to dig, told him go right ahead, but just show me what you get out of there. She said, well, they commenced digging, and they dug for a long time, and then they left, and then they didn't come back for a while, and then they came back and said, well, we want to dig some more. She said, no, you can't dig anymore. I said, why? You didn't show me what you got out of there. And she said, by God, I wouldn't let him back in either. And that was her stipulation. She wanted to see, that's all. Just see. You know, like when you pull a tick off of a dog and he's got to smell it?
Yeah.
You know, he won't be satisfied unless he smells whatever you pulled off his body.
Well, I would
at least
insist,
had a dog like that.
Insist on that.
Well, my dog always did that. He wouldn't let me go.
You mean you've been over to the piece of ground?
Oh, yes. We've been all over the ground.
All over it.
Yeah, the whole quarter section. It is a nice piece of property. I think so. I think it's worth more than what they're asking for it. But at any rate, the whole thing is now, Mary Townsend, see, she's 67, and Marvin, I think it's about 59 or so, 58.
Was he that much?
Yeah.
I didn't think so.
It's a good bit younger.
Not as much as I saw.
You thought he's older than that?
I was younger.
Younger.
Well,
yeah.
I didn't know.
He appears, I would have put him on down a little bit earlier, except he started talking. I finally asked him, well, I had a reason to, because I'm trying to calculate what they're up to. You know, what they do need money wise and all this kind of thing. Trying to get it all straightened out. Well, now he's on leave of absence from university. He tried to quit, and they didn't want him to quit, so they gave him leave of absence. The reason for that is that Mary don't want to stay by herself.
Yeah.
She's scared.
Yeah.
And I managed to get that much written down, at first part of it, about the lightning. When we left to go look at the property, Marvin and I, he was just friendly right straight off, and we got in the car and said, well, come on, let's look at the property. And she yells out and says, y'all don't mess around out there now. You better hurry back. Come on now. It's going to start raining. You got to come. Don't you get lost out there. Come on back. Just really strong. Sky was all blue. Got over there, and we weren't gone 45 minutes, an hour. And as soon as we walked back to the door of that house, cloud came over, and the sun disappeared, and it didn't come out again all afternoon from about 5:30. And that was about 1 o'clock, I reckon, or 1:30 at that time. And so he said, well, come on in. And she was shelling peas on the front porch, sitting there in a rocker. And we sat down. We began talking a little bit about Thrasher and some of the things going on around the area, and weavers and things. And all of a sudden, the damnedest lightning bolt didn't strike, and I thought it hit her. Because she just went like this, man. Oh, God. And then her dog commenced to shiver and all over, you know, and the dog's cowering. And then she gets up and says, well, let's go sit in the living room. And so, you know, get off the porch and go get in the living room. And it wasn't raining, just lightning one time. And then later on it started raining. And we sat there and talked. And when I first came, I said, you know, I'm sorry, it's lunchtime. And he says, oh, well, it's past lunchtime. And so I really didn't think too much about eating. I was hungry because I hadn't eaten. And I'd already been jawing all the way through much time with Jesse May in town. And so she's sitting there this whole time. Now it's getting on past 2 o'clock. And it's getting about 2:30 or so, 2:15. And all through the rainstorm, the storm finally says, well, I think I can go, I think it stopped storming. I think I can go back and fix us some lunch. She wasn't going to go back there and do anything in the kitchen while it was storming.
No.
And that lady, she's scared of lightning, and amongst other things. She refuses to stay by herself at all. So, I mean, so the point is that they've got to sell this property to get some income so he can quit work and stay with her. Now, a man came by and offered him cash, property. Oh, no, we can't, we're not going to take that cash to pay all that income tax. No, sir. So I rig up this thing. We go over there and say, well, you don't want any cash. What if we give you 29% down, the rest on for 15 years? Well, good Lord, no, we're not going to take that. We want in 5 years. She says, I don't think I'm going to be living any longer than 5 years. And then today I went back and offered him 20,000 down and 7,000 a year for 15 years. And they just blanched at that. Because the last time I talked to them, we talked about their income, how they're going to handle it, and the tax structure, and all this kind of thing, and what it meant for them. And they said, no, hell no, they wouldn't handle that at all, 15 years. That was way in the future. Couldn't consider that. Besides, they needed more than $7,000 a year. I said, well, they wanted 7 years, 25% down 7 years. And I said, well, you know that's not going to give you about $3,000 a year more. And then after 7 years, what you going to do? Well, then she comes up again. This first time she said that, it was the second time we looked at the property. This time she says, well, I don't know. I don't much think I'm going to be living. And so, it's more, see, it's her property from old man Guthrie, see? Or something like that. Anyhow, she feels she's got pretty much of her sweat and blood in that property. And she's not at all anxious to stretch that money out too far beyond when she thinks she's going to live. And she, I'll get, that's a little bit in there. You know, she's got it calculated out. She's not going to be around too much longer. Of course, you know, she does a mighty lot of complaining. She's, oh, we got into the whole sickness thing with the shingles and the doctors and a lot of things like that. But anyhow, that's more or less the story with the purchase of the property. And so what it's turning around to be is I finally found out that they have made up their mind that they're going to put it into improving their cattle stock. That's the reason they want more than $7,000 a year, because they want to stop selling cattle and building up their herd. At the same time, they're selling off their pasture, 155-acre pasture land, and you know where they're going to pasture them? In that Owens, Illinois scrub land.
Yeah, I know about you that.
Now, that's the mentality you're working with on that. And they're going to put money into building that herd up, so when that 7 years ends, they're going to live off the cows, and they're on a year-by-year lease with Owens, Illinois, and they can cancel it any time. And I could not persuade them off of 7 years. Anyway, I mean, it's so much more advantages. I mean, if they're younger now, and they could supplement their income one way or the other, $7,000. And hell, they could live sumptuously on $7,000 if they throw away their damn cows. You know that. Because they own their house, they grow their own peas. Everything's free and clear. And if they throw away that damn farm business, they could live like a king, $7,000. As long as they run that farm, they need $15,000 to run the farm. You ought to know about that. He told me, he says, well, I sell about $7,000 worth of cattle a year. I think it was that. No, he might have said 10. And he makes between 6 and 7 at the university. He told me another time that about $12,000 runs through their hands a year. And he said, that's an awful lot of money. Then they started talking about how it was all mostly out in feed and $750 repair the mowing machine. And I was saying, well, you know, it's about as cheap. Go ahead and get a custom mower, didn't it? Well, I said, cheaper than that in 1 year, but this should last 3 years. This mowing machine calculated over 3 years. They still holding up that machinery that could run a 500-acre ranch for their... Actually, they're just... Well, they got some hay on that other 155 acres. I don't know how much. Not a hell of a lot. They say they got hay on it, but it won't make much. Because he hadn't even improved the last 25 acres he's cleared. All he did was throw seed out there. And he keeps saying, well, I'm not much of a money manager. But here they're going to spend their fortune 7 years' time. Taxes are going to eat them up. No way they're going to dodge taxes. They wouldn't go hire a tax lawyer to do it. They're not going to trust anybody to invest money for them, see? Hide it in the tax thing. So taxes are going to chew away at them.
How much will the taxes take at that rate?
Well, that's really hard to calculate. If you own a capital business, when you sell, you take one half of your profit and apply that to your income, and it's taxed at a regular income rate. The profit on their land would be the difference between what they paid for it and what they sold it. which probably be $60,000 or $70,000 or something like that, maybe more. And then that turns into percentage. And so each yearly payment, you take that percentage and then take half of that percentage and then you get taxed on it. And of course, that will depend on how much deductions they can come up with. On the basis that I was going to, that I offered them the price thing, they probably wouldn't have to pay tax one at all. Because they're getting $7,000, and even if it was all profit, every bloody bit of it, then only half of that's taxable, and that's only $3,500. And staying at home, you can run up $3,500 worth of deductions if you try hard enough. They said, you know what? We're going to become the biggest drunkards in the world. I said, wait a minute. You told me last time you just took a drink every once in a while. And he says, no, we're going to be the biggest drunkards in the world. I says, why is that? He says, you know that whiskey is tax deductible. We'd already been through this drinking thing on the first visit. You know, he was yelling about this guy's out there trying to, that she bought a trailer for them. Bought him a trailer, one of their friends or nephews or cousins, set him up there so he could stay there. She says, I don't care what he did at night. On the weekends, he's free. As long as he stays there during the day, because Marvin will be home nights and weekends. As long as he stays there during the day. Well, no more got him out there. One night he comes home yelling drunk. Next night he's at home drunk again. Then later on he comes and brings a friend and they're both drunk. And then he goes off and he stays gone 3 or 4 days. And he comes back and he's been drinking. So I had to go tell him. I said, do you plan to keep on doing that? He says, I won't do what I damn well please. And she says, then I had to go tell his wife. I reckon the wife was there the whole time. See, well, he's gone anyhow. She had mentioned that to start with. She evidently likes a man around. And so, said, I had to go tell his wife there was no hard feelings meant at all, but they was going to have to leave. And I gave the trailer away. She's done that 3 times now, I think. Or bought 3 trailers and given them away for first one reason or another. Oh, She's been done in so much, guy, you wouldn't believe it. She has really been done in by everybody and everything. This Miss Jim Hope, the mainstay of the Windsor Methodist Church.
Of the Townsend Baptist Church.
Townsend Baptist Church. Well, she called while I was there today.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, I heard him mumbling back and forth about, well, we've just been, you know, it's been terrible. And
Townsend Methodist Church.
Methodist. I thought it was Methodist.
That's right.
Yeah. And the story she put out about this Miss Jim Hope, amongst other things, well, first of all, she somehow got mad at one of the preachers and went down to Lake City, some headquarters, had the preacher fired, and had a new preacher put in. And so Mary decides, she says, now, what's this? Calls up and says, how come she can run it? She says, well, she's paying for the church, putting the most money in. She said, did you say anything about me giving any money? No. So what Mrs. Hope's been doing, she comes out and goes around to all these people and says, we've got to have money for this church. Can you give some money? She says, we gave her $35. They gave her $30, and names off a bunch of people. Miss Hope takes all the money and puts it in her checking account and writes a check out to the church, makes it tax deductible for herself, and gets control of the church because she's a big star. And they don't have anything else to do with her. That made her mad. She was laughing when she turned around to Marvin and said, Marvin, Ms. Hope wants you to be sure and come to church tomorrow night. Just laughed, you know. And I know the Hopes probably got more money than I ever hoped to even look at in my life. But I thought that was really something else for a woman to occupy her time doing that, and she's got more money than she could ever spend. And she goes around to people like the Townsends and the neighbors. and does that. Did they ever tell you about the Seventh-day Watchers?
Oh, no.
Good Lord. Now, that little trailer down there on their property, they sold the property to Marvin's sister,
Marlo and Clarinelle.
Okay, Marlo. And Marlo was a catfisher and a gator hunter. And he'd been that all of his life, he said.
And one of the best.
He belonged, and she did too, to the Seventh-day Watchers. This is some sort of an offshoot from the Seventh-day Adventist. And he'd been making good enough money. He'd been paying a tenth of his income to these people, sending it to Jacksonville. Evidently don't have a church around here. And one day, the man comes down, and the preacher from Jacksonville comes down and says, "You're going to have to quit catching catfish. It's against the rules and regulations of that church to eat catfish."
Oh.
He was therefore in bad standing. And would, if he was going to maintain his membership, see, the money he sent in was dirty money. Because the fish didn't have scales, and you can't eat a fish that doesn't have scales. That and pork and a couple other things they're up on. And then furthermore, he turns around and says, "And the two of you can't stay in this house together because you're living in sin." Marlowe's been married before. So one of you's going to have to leave. And Mary says, right there, that was the beginning of it. And he broke that marriage up. They were getting along fine before that. And he caused them to break up. And Marlowe, he left the church. And the wife, she stayed in the church. He said, "You know, I saw her at some function not too long ago. She had white gloves, white shoes, white hat, white pocketbook, and a long white dress." She says, "That's what she wore to these dances. And she was drunk. And she stays drunk all the time. That church teaches them to drink." I made him swear to that statement.
And Marvin backed her up?
Yes. They both swore to that statement. That the church teaches them to drink. She's been a drunkard. I almost died on that one.
I can just hear her letting that line out. She kind of holds it back on you, and then she leans forward and tells it.
And you know what a steel trap closed mind she's got on. I mean, she's got her definite opinions. Marvin's loose. I mean, compared to her. He entertains thoughts that are moving along a little bit. She's stopped down the road a long time ago. Whew, telling you. Well, that was just part of it. There's a whole lot more to that Townsend thing.